We're holding a Hey Amar Aleph, the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, Ad Moshe Sholem is Agshamim. Till what point do we ask for rain? And we've been distinguishing in the Gemara between mentioning rain, which is saying Mashiv Ruach Amar Dageshem, where we're praising Hashem for giving rain, versus the same Talamot of the Veracha, which is asking Hashem for rain. So up till what point do we ask for it? Rav Yehuda Omer Shiyavra Pesach. Rav Yehuda says until Pesach is over. And we had in the Gemara yesterday a few possibilities what he means by that. Does it mean when Pesach is actually over? Does it mean maybe that, does it mean maybe until when the time of Shechting the Korban Pesach is over? Or maybe when the first Chazan leaves the Omud on the morning of Pesach, the Gemara, we shot all those down and we said when we ended up sticking with Ullah's explanation that there are two Tanurim who disagree within what Rabbi Yehuda says. You have the Tana in the previous Mishnah that says that you stop saying Mashav Ruach Merda Geshem, but in the morning, the last time you say it is the morning of the first day Pesach, Musaf of the first day Pesach, already you're saying Merda Tol. And then we have the Tana of our Mishnah who says that you continue to do it, throughout Pesach. We said, I mean, in principle, we could have distinguished between She'ela and Askara, but we ended up saying that when you stop one, you stop the other. Anyway, so Rabbi Yehuda says when Pesach is over is, Rabbi Yehuda of our Mishnah says that when Pesach is over is when you stop saying, the same Talamot. Rabbi Meir Omer Sheyetzer Nisan. Rabbi Meir says you keep on going further until Nisan is over, till the whole month of Nisan is over. Shenema, and he brings a pasuk to show that that Nisan is still a time when you can have rain. Shenema Vayored Lachem Geshem. The Navi says to the Jewish people, you should thank Hashem that He brought down for you rain, Moreh Umalkush, the early rain and the late rain, like we have in Krishna, Yoreh Umalkush. Yoreh means that Yoreh Moreh means the early rain that usually takes place Cheshvan time. Malkush is the late rain that like finishes up the crops development that usually takes place in Nisan. So we're going to actually learn in the Gemara tomorrow why these rains are called Yoda and Malkush respectively. We're going to talk about that tomorrow, Baruch Hashem. So anyway, so the Navi says to the Jewish people, you should thank Hashem that in this particular case, He brought you Moreh and Malkush, Barishon, in the first month, meaning in Nisan. So what was the story? That's the story that we're going to see in the Gemara, because usually the Moreh and Malkush are several months apart. So the Gemara says, Amalei Rav Nachman Rav Yitzchak, Yoda b'Nisan. What do you mean Yoda took place in Nisan? Yoda b'Macheshvan. The Yoda, the early rain, usually takes place in Cheshvan, as we're going to learn tomorrow, Beis Hashem. Abditnan, or Ditanya really, it's a Braisa, Yoda b'Macheshvan or Malkush b'Nisan. That's the definition. When we say v'nasati mitarat zechem v'ita Yoda or Malkush, it means that Hashem says, I'll bring the early rains in their time in Cheshvan, and the late rains in their time in Nisan. That both of them don't happen in Nisan.
So we would call the early rains the fall rains.
I guess you could call them the fall rains and the spring rains, yeah. Anyway, so what is the Navi talking about? Omrele, so Rabbi Yitzchak explained to him, Hochi Omer Rabbi Yochanan, this is what Rabbi Yochanan said, this was a one-time thing in history. Bimei Yoyo ben Pesuel Niskayim Mikrazeh. This pasuk took place and was fulfilled in the times of Yoel ben Pesuel, the Navi Yoel, one of the Trei Aser. And in fact, the pasuk by Yoel Lachan Geshem comes from Yoel. So what happened? Dichtivei, at the beginning of Yoel's Sefer, he says, he describes a terrible plague of locusts that hit Eretz Yisrael. Yesra gozam ochala arveh gomer, whatever the gozam, which is one type of locust left over, the arveh ate, and whatever the arveh left over, the next kind ate, there were four different kinds of locusts. In fact, he describes it as an unprecedented. He describes it as an unprecedented kind of plague. Which, in fact, Rashi on the pasuk in Shmos says, "What about the Makas Arba and Mitzrayim?" The difference is the one in Mitzrayim was all one species and devoured everything. Here we're talking about it was four species, one after the other. There would be one year of one species, and the next year a different one, and the next year it went on for years and years. So eventually, what happened was. And on top of that, so the Gemara is telling us that along with the plague of locusts, there was also a drought. Which in fact, the Gemara is going to tell us further down on the Amud, there was actually altogether, there was a 7-year famine then. So Oysa Shana, Yotza Adar, Vola Yodu Gshon. That year, Adar was already over and rain still hadn't fallen yet. Yodavahim Revia Rishona Be'echa B'Nissan. And finally, the first rain of the year fell on Rosh Chodesh Nissan. The reason why we call it revia, by the way, we're going to talk about in the Gemara tomorrow, the word revia is actually related to the word for having relations, like a revia and nirba, because in a certain sense, like you have, the earth is fertilized by the, is fertilized by the rain. It's like a husband and wife's relationship, that creates children. So like this, that creates produce. So therefore it's called revia. So that year, the first rain fell on Rosh Chodesh Nissan. Marsha, by the way, has an interesting point. So why tackle where if the Eved Shteh is going to give rain that year? Now, the Pesukim describe over there, the Navi Yoel is telling the people, good morning, Ali, the Navi is telling the people you have to do tshuva, you have to go and cry in the Bis Mikdash and everywhere else to ask Hashem to take away this Zera. Fine, why did Hashem take it away? Finally, the Chodesh Nissan. So Marsha explains, we learned in Masechta Rosh Hashanah that Pesach Al HaTevuah, Pesach time is when Hashem judges the world about what the crops are going to be like for next year. That means, and when does the year begin for that purpose? Rosh Chodesh Nissan. So now that it came Rosh Chodesh Nissan, it's a new year. Therefore, the 7 years that Hashem had decided are over, and therefore now rain can fall. So Amar Lahem Navi Yisrael Tzur V'Ziru. So now the Navi Yoel says to the Jewish people. So that's preposterous. It was. The Gemara is going to associate it later on with a. So Bechlal, when the Navi Yoel lived is not so simple. You have Midrashim that say that he was the son of Shmuel HaNavi, in which case he was fairly early on because Shmuel was before the Bais Hamikdash was even built. There's opinions that later on the Gemara is going to associate it now with a famine that happened in the time of Yehoram Melech Yisrael, who was a Rasha. There are opinions that Yoel lived as late as the times of Menashe. So whenever it was, apparently there was a serious problem So Amar Lahem Navi Yisrael Tzur V'Ziru. So the Navi says to the Jewish people, okay, now that the rain has fallen, go plant. Amru Loi, so the people said to him, how can we? We barely have any food left. Mishi Yesh Le Kav Chitim, like Kabayim Sa'urin, if a person has one kav of wheat or two kav of barley, what should he do? Yechlenu v'yichya. Should he eat it so at least he'll survive for now? Or yizreenu v'yamus. Or he's going to plant it, then he's going to have nothing to eat. He's going to die. What good is it going to do him? The crops are going to start growing if he, meanwhile, is completely out of food. Nevertheless, the Navi tells them, trust in the Eved and go plant. Nasalahem nes. So a nes happened to them. V'nisgalalahem mashabak solin u'mashabakhorin namalin. They were able to discover the grain that was inside the walls that bugs had brought in there at different times or whatever, and that ants had brought into their anthills. So now they had a much larger, not much larger, but they had a larger amount. So Rabbi Hananel says that the vote is, in other words, that now what they did is they ate. So now they have both. They have what to eat, and they have what to eat, the stored grain that they had from before, and they had what to plant, what they found now in the anthills and whatnot. Rashi learns the other way around. Rashi learns that they planted the grain that they had in their possession, and the implication would be that they ate what they found in the anthills and whatnot. Meforshim explain one reason why Rashi says that, the opposite of Rabbi Hananel, is because Rashi takes the view that what the Gemara means is, when did the nest happen? Only after they showed their betochen in what the Navi is telling them by going and planting the grain that they had in their possession. So now their cupboards are completely empty. Now the Eved Shteh made them a nest, so they have what to eat until that grain grows, and they discovered what was in the anthills and whatnot. So Yotzu Vizaru Sheni Shlishi Ravi. So they were planting for the next few days, the second, third, and fourth of Nisan. The Yodalahem Raviya Shniya Bachamisha Nisan. Then the second rain fell for them on the fifth of Nisan, and the grain was growing very rapidly. And they brought the korban omer on the 16th of Nisan to make all that grain that they planted to make it that now they could eat it. So it comes out that grain that normally would take 6 months to develop, usually you plant wheat Tishrei Cheshvan time and you harvest it Nisan Iyar time. So it normally takes 6 months for it to grow. It grew in 11 days. Which Tosfos points out, actually, I mean, so you have some of it was a little bit more than that, because we're saying that we're already planting some of it on the second. But in other words, Tosfos says that the minimum, given that they planted the second, third, and fourth, and then that means some of it, the first full day that it's growing is the fifth, then it means some of it grew in only 11 days. So nimtza omer hakarav mitzvah shal shisha chadashim karav mitzvah shal achadas ayoyim. So the omer, which usually is from grain that took 6 months to develop, now was brought from grain that had taken only 11 days and was fully developed. So that's what the Navi is telling the Jewish people. You should be so thankful to Hashem that he brought you the Moreh and the Malkush in Nisan, that he compressed the growing season like that into only into less than 2 weeks. So it's about that generation that the Pasuk says, those who plant with tears, meaning these Jewish people who are planting with tears, not knowing if they're going to have any food after that, they don't know that's going to grow in only 11 days, and even during those 11 days, a person has to eat. So they're crying as they're planting, they're trusting in what the Navi says, but they're still worried in the back of their minds what's going to be. They'll harvest with joy when they saw that it grew so fast, and that meanwhile Hashem had provided for them what to eat by helping them find what was inside the walls and the anthills. And the pasuk continues, Holech Yelech Uvachoy, he goes along crying, Nosim Meshach Hazara, when he's carrying the seeds that he's going to plant. And then the pasuk continues, Bo Yaveh Berino Nosim Alamosav. So my Holech Yelech Uvachoy Nosim Meshach Hazara. Who is that part of the pasuk referring to? If it means the people, we already said Hazorim B'dima B'rinu Yitzeru. So what is Holech Yelech Uvachoy adding? The Amar of Yehuda, it means sure. It means not just the people. The ox, when you're taking it to plow, Shul Chodesh, when it's going to plow and all and to plant, Holech Uvachoy, the ox is also going and crying because it's also starving. It's also hungry. Yeah. And by the time it's coming back, it's able already, the grain is growing so fast that it's already able to eat the grass. The first stage of the growth of the plants is called choziz, and at that point it's not yet edible for people, but it's edible for animals, so it's already able to eat choziz from the furrow that it just plowed. So in other words, they planted and immediately it started growing. And so there's a few different explanations that the Mephoshim say on the pasuk what Meshech Hazara means. It can mean the container that they put the seeds in. It can mean the seeds that they're bringing out towards to the field to be planted. Whatever the case, the point is that the pasuk is clear enough. Holech Yelech Uvachoy Nosei Meshech Hazara. They're going to plant the seeds and he's going and crying. But Bo Yaveh Berino, he's going to come back with joy. Nosei Alamosav, carrying his sheaves of grain. So the point is, we're saying that the Holech Yelech Uvachoy is actually referring to the animal, that the animal itself is also crying on the way from hunger. But on the way back already, it's already able to eat the grass that's supposed to starting to grow, because right away, when they planted, Hashem again sped up the growth season so much that already it's starting to grow even as it's walking along in the field over there. So it already has what to eat. Marshall learns a little bit differently. Now, in other words, Bachazirase means by the time we're finished with a couple of days of planting, on the 5th is when it's starting to grow, because we said before it took 11 days from the 5th to the 16th of Nisan. Vizel Bo Yaveh Berino, so that's what it means, that it comes with joy. Okay, my Nose Alamoisav, why are we mentioning the point that we were saying he carries his sheaves? So first of all, it's already said Berino Yitzeru. So what is this adding? What is this Nosei Alamosav adding? And second of all, Marsha explains, and actually there's a Tosfos that's supposed to be on this as well, which is where you can find it in Ein Yaakov, but it's not printed here on the Gemara page for some reason, that points out if it just meant that they're gathering the sheaves in the normal way, then the expression would be Nosei Alumos. Why Alumosav? Why his sheaves? Who else is he going to be gathering? Amar Chista va'ami lav masnisa tonas. That Chista says, or some say, we learn in a brisa that not only did the grain grow so much faster than normal, but the grain itself was like this. Normally, when you have a stalk of grain, usually most of the height of the stalk consists of the straw that it stands on, and then at the top you have the grain. Here it was the other way around. Kona zeres shibolas zrosayim. The stalk was only one zeres, which is a half arm long. The shibolus, the actual the part of it that has the grains, was two zerosim, which is an entire arm long. So the grain part was twice as long as the stalk part. So therefore, it was alumoisav. So the point is, in other words, Tosfos and Marashah say that the vertes, in other words, they could be, that would make it so much heavier, they couldn't bundle it into normal size bundles like they usually would. They had to bundle them into smaller size bundles, so it's like alamoy sub, their personal bundle, different than the usual size that they would every other year, because there was so much grain in it compared to a regular year. And that's so in that way, so the Pasuk actually says, the Navi tells the people that the Shilamti Lachemis Hashanim, I will pay you back for all the years that the Yelek and the Gozam and the whatever ate. So now we see how Hashem literally paid them back by making the grain grow so fast, and there was such a tremendous amount of it, far more than normal. So that's what, so again, so the Pasuk that the Mishnah is mentioning, by Yoda Lachem Geshem, Murdo, Malkish tradition, is talking about that story. More in this connection, Amalei of Nachman Rav Yitzchak, my dichtiv, what does it mean in this connection? The Pasuk says, the Pasuk describes how Elisha is speaking to the Isha Shunamis, the one whose son he revived. He tells her, you and your family should leave this part of Eretz Yisrael for now. He kara Hashem l'rov, because Hashem has called for the famine. V'gam bar la'aretz shev hashanim, and it's going to be coming to the land for 7 years. So you should move someplace safer for the time being.
So
that would mean that Yoel was in this time. The story with Elisha is taking place in the times of Yehoram, Melech Yisrael, who was one of the kings of Yisrael about 80 years or so after the kingdom of Yisrael was established. So in that case, that would put him a few generations after Shmuel, but okay, fine. In those times, people lived longer than normal, so it's still possible that it was the son of Shmuel, but he'd have to be very old then, but still not like hundreds of years old, maybe like 150 years old or something. But but as I said before, for example, I think Seder Olam puts Yoel on the times of Menashe, which is another 200 years later. Anyway, Yehoram was not a good king, no. All but one of the Malchi Yisrael, it says on the Vayatzar Rabbe Eini Hashem. And the one exception, his name was Shalom and Yavish, lasted only a month. So, yeah, unfortunately, they weren't good guys.
Oh, you're talking about the king.
The kings of Yisrael, the Ten Shvatim, yeah.
Oh, the North.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Anyway. So what does this pasuk mean that there's going to be? So there's a famine for 7 years. Bahanach sheva shonim my ochel. What do people eat during those 7 years? Nailef, there's a famine for 1 or 2 years. Okay, people have stored up grain, but nobody stores grain for that long, unless in the Tzrayim under Yosef's patronage. So what do they eat? Amalei. So Rabbi Yitzchak tells him, Hachi Amar Rabbi Yechanan. I'll tell you what Rabbi Yechanan said. Shana Rishona ochel mash bebatim. The first year they still had what they had stored in their houses, so they ate that. The second year they ate what was left over in the field, but schichim that are still growing from grains that dropped in previous years. The third year already they ran out of that, so they ate the meat of the kosher animals. The fourth year they're reduced to eating the non-kosher animals, the horses, the junkies, etc. By the fifth year, they're down to eating shkotim or matzim. Low. Rashi defines in several places in the Chumash that a remet is any creature that walks very low to the ground, so you don't see its legs when it's walking. It just like looks like it's scurrying around. So it means, you know, so it can include insects. It includes various kinds of small mammals like mice and things like that. Whatever. Anyway, so that's what they ate. Shishis psad b'neim of Nisayim. The sixth year they're already down to, Rashi stresses, mitzasam. Not all of them, but some of them are reduced to eating their own children. And Marshall says, why is Rashi mentioning that? Because the fact is, we said before, some people did have a little grain left. That's what they were asking Yo-Yo, what should we do? Should we plant that grain or should we eat it? So obviously not everybody was completely out of food, but there were some people who were down to eating psad b'neim of Nisayim. In fact, the psukim describe over there how at one point, a woman cries out to Yehoram, saying it's not fair. I made a deal with my neighbor that we're going to eat each other's children, and she's reneging on her part of the deal. And Yehoram was shocked out of his wits by that. So yeah,
by the fact that she's even
coming with such a case, yeah. Shvius v'sar zroyas sehem, the seventh year, they're eating the flesh of their own arms, which doesn't necessarily mean literally that they're gnawing off their own arms. It means they're really shriveling down to nothing, like their arms themselves are losing whatever muscle they had because their body is like consuming itself. L'kayim mashanema, this fulfilled, the loshen apostat, ish v'sar zroyas yechelu, people will be eating their own arms. So now, since we had a bunch, since we had something, or two things so far, we had that Rav Nachman asked Rav Yitzchak about the meaning of the pasuk in our Mishnah, and the related thing about that famine that was concurrent with that plague of locusts. So now the Gemara is going to digress now to talking about a bunch of other things that Rav Nachman asked Rav Yitzchak. So the Amalei Rav Nachman Rav Yitzchak, my dichtiv b'kibuch kodesh v'loy over be'ir. The Navi says to the Jewish people, within you, among you, is the holiness, and I will not come into the city. So what does one have to do with the other? Just the opposite. What does that mean? Because of the holiness among you, in other words, because you've done Shuvah, therefore I won't come into your city. It should be the other way around. So, Tosfos points out that the word ear can also mean enmity. It can also mean a feeling of anger, of being an enemy. We find in a few places in Tanakh where the Shodesh Ayin Resh means an enemy. So fine, it can mean that in Poshet Pshat, Hashem is saying, I won't come against you with enmity because you're doing Shuvah. But still, the question is, if they're doing Shuvah, then if all that is fine. Hashem's not going to be an enemy. We love Hashem and we want Hashem to love us back. We don't just want that he won't be our enemy. So what is the Pasuk saying? Amalei, so Rabbi Yitzchak tells him, Hachi Amar Rabbi Yechman, Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, like Ovi B'Yushalayim Shalmaila, Ad Sha'ovi B'Yushalayim Shalmata. I will not come into the city of the city of Yerushalayim on high until I'm able to come into Yerushalayim down on earth. In other words, therefore, the Kirbuch HaKadosh, when you have the Kirbuch HaKadosh, when you are holy among yourselves in the lower city of Yerushalayim, then I will be able to come into the Yerushalayim up above. But until then, not. Among other things, it expresses the idea that Imo Yanoichi Bitzara, that the Shekhinah is in Golos, as long as we're in Golos. So the Gemara says, Umi Ika Yerushalayim Amayla? Is there such a thing as a city of Yerushalayim up above? And the answer is Ein. Dichtiv Yerushalayim Habnuya, Yerushalayim that's built up, Ki'ir Shechubro LaYachtav, like a city that is joined together, meaning Rashi says, Yerushalayim down here on earth will be built up like the city that it's connected with, in other words, like parallel, in other words, implying that there's another Yerushalayim. Where else is it going to be, if not Lamaila? So therefore we see that there is a Yerushalayim Shalmaila. In Hasidus, there's a lot of different explanations about this. Among other things, Yerushalayim in general is associated in Hasidus with the idea of Yira. Yerushalayim is Yira Shalom. So therefore, it represents Yira of the Eibishter, and there's Yira Tatara and Yira Ilah. So therefore, the part of what the Gemara is saying over here then is that the Yira Tatara is a prerequisite for Yira Ilah. So the Eibishter is saying, until you have Yira Tatara, then there can't be Yira Ilah. And I can't come and be connected with you on that level. It also includes that everyone's talked about the idea that it also represents the higher and lower Jews, maybe tied with the previous one, the ones who achieve Yira Tatara versus Yira Ilah. So the point is, in other words, that the simple Jews, the lower ones, are the prerequisite for the higher ones to reach their level, and all kinds of different things like that. There's an interesting explanation even that says that why is the city called Yerushalayim? By rights, you have, in English we call it Jerusalem. In Aramaic also it's called Yerushalem. And in Tanakh, in all but a few places, it's spelt without the second yud. It's spelt yud resh vav shin lamed mem. And we stick in the yud. So why taka is it called Yerushalayim? So there's a vort on it that says because the suffix ayim always means a plural, like shnasayim is a pair, is 2 years, oznayim is a pair of ears, etc. So Yerushalayim represents that there's a pair of Yerushalayim, the one down here and the one up in Shemayim. So that's what the pasuk means, in other words, that Hashem is saying, when you do tshuva and I'm able to come into Yerushalayim Shalmata, then I will go into the Yerushalayim Shalmaila, but not before that. But Amalei Rav Nachman Rav Yitzchak, my dichtiv, here's another pasuk I want to ask you about. The pasuk says, in Yumia, over achas yivaru v'yichsalu, with one thing they are yivaru and they're foolish. Now the word yivaru can have two meanings. It can mean to be foolish, like ishbar lo yeda, and it can mean to burn, like biyur chometz. So with one thing, yivaru and they're foolish, muster havolim eitzhu, the muser of nonsense, of vanity, is wood. So what does the pasuk mean? Rashi explains that the second half of the pasuk is relatively easy to understand. It means that we're saying, that Ibishter is saying about the Goyish nations, their hearts are closed up like wood. We can't trying to give them musr is no more effective than banging on a piece of wood. There's a musr is havolim, it's nonsense because they're not going to accept it anyway. Eitu, because they're nothing but wood. So therefore, like, there's no sense in punishing them because they're not going to understand what they're being punished for anyway. But what does the first half of the pasuk mean? Now, in context, the pasuk is talking about the goyim who worship Avodah Zarah, and they're saying, so they believe in the Eidish there in a certain sense, the Korolei Alakodei Alakaya, as the Gemara says elsewhere, that they believe that Hashem is the ruler over all rulers. They just think that Hashem doesn't deal directly with the world. So V'achas, with one thing, Yivaru V'Yichsalu, they're foolish and stupid, Musar Havolim, A2, that they talk one another and give one another Musar to worship wood, not realizing that they should worship the Eidish there. But what's the Yivaru V'Yichsalu, and why Achas, not just one Aveira, that puts people in Gehenna, etc. So Amalei Hachi Amar Rav Yechanan Achas Hi Shema Va'Eres Rishchayim BeGehenna. It means there's one particular Aveira out of all the other ones that puts the Rishchayim that they have to get burnt in Gehenna. Ma'hi Avodah Zarah, namely Avodah Zarah, and we know that Ksiv Hacha Musa Havolim Eitzu. Here we're talking about we're mentioning the word Havolim. A different pasuk in Yirmiyahu, actually in the same parak, refers to it's nonsense. It's things that they do in order to trick people, which is Avodah Zarah, which the whole point was that they tricked people in the first place into worshiping Avodah Zarah. So we see that the word hevel refers to Avodah Zarah. Therefore, we understand that Musa Havolim Eitzu also refers to Avodah Zarah. Tatui means like trickery, like Ba'yisik Ve'eno Kimisatea, Yaakov says to Rivka, I'm afraid that Yitzchak is going to think that I'm a deceiver. So these are deceitful things that they do in order to trick people into doing Avodah Zarah. So we see that Musar Havolim, Eitzu, is referring to Avodah Zarah. Actually, Marsha points out, you don't really need that, in the context of the pasuk itself, makes it very clear it's talking about Avodah Zarah. Rather, Marsha says, the limud is more, how do we know that Yivaru means that they're going to get destroyed, they're going to get burnt, rather than, again, one meaning of Yivaru can mean they're foolish, is because you have the pasuk over there that mentions Hevel Hema Master Tatoim, it ends off, the Eisk Kudosim Yevedu. When Hashem looks over their Averis, Yevedu, they're going to be destroyed. So we see, in other words, that because of the Hevel, they're going to be destroyed, the same way that tells us that the word Yivaru V'Yichsalu means that they're going to get burnt in Gehenna for it. V'amalei Rav Nachman L'Yitzchak. Then Rav Nachman asked Rav Yitzchak another one. My Dichtivki, another passage from Yirmiyah, Kishtayim Rois Osa'ami. The Navi says in Hashem's name, two bad things my people have done. What do you mean? Taratin Hudahabu? What do you mean? They did only two things? Eschen v'arba shikolahu? Have they been forgiven for all the 24 things that they did? Now, where do we get 24? Rashi says two explanations. Number one, you have a Perek in Yechezkel, who lived, he was a younger contemporary of Yirmiyah, so he lived at the same time when this Nevuah is being said, and he has one of his Nevuahs, where he describes 24 Averis that the Jewish people did. That perek is in Minig Ashkenaz, they lean it as the Haftarah of Parshas Kedoshim because it refers to many of the Averis that it says in Parshas Kedoshim not to do. In our Minig, instead we do a different perek from Yechezkel, which is not quite as harsh. Anyway, so he mentions 24 Averis over there. Number two, Rashi says they were over on things that it says in every one of the 24 books of Tanakh. And then Rabbeinu Hananel and Rabbeinu Gershom and various other Rishonim and Achronim have a number of different explanations. One of them is, the Gemara mentions elsewhere that there are 24 things that if a person does them, they can be put in Chedim for them. So the point is that, this Bais Rishon we're talking about, yeah.
Yeah, because they always say three.
So it's three, but each one of them, you have among them, you're within them, you have other ones, yeah.
Right,
so
you're right, by 20.
Well, that's right, but what we mean is also, in other words, so for example, Rabbeinu Hananel says we're also referring to, for example, the fact that you have 24 things for which a person can be put in cherem, and they were over on all of those. So why is the pasuk, so whatever the explanation is, why is the pasuk saying that they did two bad things as though, like, we're ignoring everything else they did? Amalei, so he tells him, Hachi Amar Rabbi Yechanan, this is what Rabbi Yechanan said, Achas, she shkula kishtayim, means they did one thing which is counted like two. Or my new Avodah Zarah. namely that they did Avodah Zarah. Now, how does Avodah Zarah count as two? Here also you have a lot of explanation. Rashi says we're going to explain soon about two particular nations that the Pasuk is going to focus on, the Kittiyim and the Kedarim, where each of them had their own deity that they worship, and the Jewish people did worse than both of them, as we're going to say in the Gemara soon. So they're in that sense it's two. A different point of it is that as the Gemara is going to bring over here, that number one, they abandoned Hashem, and number two, that instead of just saying, okay, we'll be atheists, they went and worshipped other Avodah Zarahs instead. So therefore, that's the two things. And then there's a lot of different explanations, including the fact that when a person is over on Avodah Zarah, he's over on two mitzvahs, on Noichi and Noyevacha. So the Pasuk says, Kishayim Rois Osa'ami, my nation has done two bad things. Oisi Ozwo Makur Mayim Chaim, they abandoned me, the wellspring of living water, Lachs of Lahem Boris, to carve out for themselves pits. You have to remember, the difference is a well or a spring, you constantly have fresh water welling up into it. As opposed to a burr, you store water in there, but it stagnates after a while, so it's not fresh, clear water. So imagine the Navi is saying, like you have somebody who has access to a perfectly good spring of clear, fresh water, and instead they think it's better to just have a cistern, a pit, which is going to have stale water in it. And not only that, burdus nishibarim, not only that, those pits are even broken and the water leaks out of them. So in other words, the Navi is saying, what are you doing? You're abandoning the Eivishter, who is the source of all life and everything in the world, and you're replacing him with Avodah Zarahs, which themselves are, which not only they can't give you anything, but even the Hashpa that you get through them leaks away. So that's what the Navi is saying, that the Jewish people are worshipping Avodah Zarah, and in a certain sense, that itself is the two Averis. Number one, that they're abandoning the Eivishter, and number two, that they're replacing him with inferior substitutes that don't even work. There's a famous marshal from the Dubna Magid on this that they tells about a younger man who gets married. His father-in-law tries to take him into his business, but the guy is a schlamazel. So one day his father-in-law tells him, he sends him with some money to go buy something for his warehouse. The guy comes back with a whole wagon load full of shofars. What's he going to do with a whole wagon load full of shofars? Every town only needs one. So he puts it away in a warehouse for a while. Then another time he sends him, and the guy comes back with a whole wagon load of toothpicks. Again, it's going to take forever and a half to sell them. So finally the Shver figures, you know what? When am I going to have these things in my warehouses endlessly? He calls together separately two merchants. He tells one of them, here, take the shofars. Fine, you'll only get pennies on the dollar for them. At least I want them out of my warehouse. The same one, the other one with the toothpicks. Akitsu, they meet by a fair, not knowing they were sent by the same person. They end up exchanging the two things for each other. So when they come back, so the son-in-law, the yukul, the son-in-law says, so what do you want from me? They did the same thing as I did. And the father-in-law says, you know what the difference is? They had something worthless, so they got something else worthless for it. You had perfectly good money, and you went and spent it on something worthless. So the nimshal is, the Navi is saying to the Jewish people, Mela, the goyim, if they do exchange their Avodah Zarahs one for the other, which the Gemara is going to say in a second, they usually don't even do that. At least, what are they doing? They're exchanging one worthless thing for another. But you had the Eivishter, and you're exchanging him for Avodah Zarah. So the Pasuk continues, the Navi says to the Jewish people, Ki ivru iye kitiyim ru'u, go pass by the islands of the Kittiyim, which is the Greeks or the Romans or whatever, and you'll see what they do. The Kedar shilhu, and send messengers to Kedar, which is one of the Arab tribes, the Hisbonin u'ma'od, and consider carefully what they're doing. And he says, Ahemir goya lakim, does any nation exchange their god? Behemir loya lakim, even though anyway they're not real gods, they don't have any power. But ami hemir kvode below yoyo, yet my nation has exchanged their glory, the Eivishter, for something which is ineffective. So what do we mean? Why are we mentioning the Kittiyim and Kedar? So Tana, we learn in a Braisa, Kittiyim, it's supposed to be, it says here, Kutiyim in the Gemara, that's a mistake, it's supposed to be Kittiyim. Ovdim la'esh, the Kittiyim worship fire. The Kedarim Ovdim Lamayim, the people of Kedar worship water. But Achapichi Yodim Shamayim Makabana Sa'esh, so even though the Kittiyim know that water puts out fire, so they realize themselves that their God is not all powerful, Loihe Miru Elekehem, yet they never think to themselves, you know what, we should start worshiping water like the Kedarim do, and vice versa, the Kedarim can take the view, fire evaporates water, so maybe we should start worshiping fire. They never do that. But absolutely, nevertheless, they don't exchange one god for another. And yet my nation has exchanged my glory, or their glory, actually, the Pasuk says, for something that's worthless. That's what the Navi is saying, that the Jewish people have done such a terrible thing. That's what we're saying when we say Shtayim Rois Osa'ami. We don't mean that as opposed to all the other things that they did wrong. We're saying within that, the fact that they worshipped Avodah Zarah, and that they exchange the Eveshtir for other nonsense, for things that are nonsense, is the biggest thing. But Amalei Rav Nachman L'Rav Yitzchak. Now Rav Nachman asked Rav Yitzchak another question. May dichtiv vayhi kasha zokin Shmuel. The pasuk says when Shmuel got old, so he appointed his sons as judges, and they weren't judging properly, and that's what led to Shaul being appointed as king. One of those children, by the way, was named Yoel, and there is an opinion, we said before, that the Navi Yoel was a son of Shmuel. There is an opinion that it's the same, again, that it's the same one, that eventually he did tshuva, and he became a Navi. Anyway, so the question is, we see Shmuel kol ha'ai, was Shmuel really all that old? When he passed away, he was only 52, and this is a couple of years before that. We learn in Moed Katan, it's describing over there how old does a person live to when they're Chayiv Kores, when they're Chayiv Mrs. Bastin, and the Mishnah, the Braisa mentions over there, Nes Benun Beis Shana, when a person passes away 52 years old, Zeru Misasish or Shmuel Haramasi, that's the same age that Shmuel Haramasi passed away. In other words, the Gemara is explaining over there that really like this, Kores would be any time between 50 and 60 years old. But on the other hand, we don't want to say that openly because then it would make it sound like Shmuel passed away from Kores. So we mentioned that point that he passed away at 52 years old. So he wasn't really all that old. So what do we mean by he kashes zok in Shmuel? Amalei hachi amar Rabbi Yechanan. So Rabbi Yitzchak tells him, this is what Rabbi Yechanan said. Zikna kafta olav, old age came suddenly on him. In other words, his hair started turning white when he was relatively young. How we know that he was 52, by the way, Rashi gives a couple of different calculations. Tosfos gives some other calculations. One of them is that Chana said that once I wean him, and they used to in those days nurse babies until they were 2 years old, then he'll stay in the Mishkan ad olam. Olam means 50 years, like v'avodei la'olam by an eved ivri. So therefore, it means that he ended up living for 52 years. And Rashi shows various other calculations. We see that when Eli passed away, Shmuel was 39 or 40 years old. And then after that, he led the Jewish people for another 10 years by himself. And then there was a couple of years of Shaul. And so altogether, it comes out to 52. Anyway, so old age came on him prematurely. His hair turned white prematurely. Now, why did that happen? Dichtiv. Now, you have like this. The Eveshta says to Shmuel, after the whole story with Amalek, Hashem, where Shaul didn't do what he was supposed to, he left Agag alive, he left animals alive, etc. So he says, Nichamti kimlachti es Shaul, I regret that I made Shaul king. Now Hashem was right away ready to have Shaul just die there on the spot. But the pasuk says that Shmuel was davening to Hashem all night, Vayichal Shmuel Vayitzak al Hashem kol alayla. So what was he davening to Hashem? He says, Ribbono Shel Olam, Shkaltani k'Moshe v'Aaron, you put me on the same level as Moshe and Aaron. Dichtiv, as you have the pasuk in Tilim Moshe v'Aaron v'Choyin v'Shmuel v'Kodesh Moi. Now Tilim, of course, was composed by David HaMelech, which is after this. But either, so on the side of it here, there's a reference to a Tosfos in Gittin, which says that many times the Gemara will quote a pasuk, will put a pasuk in the mouth of an earlier person, where the pasuk is only from much later, because they knew the context of, the content of the pasuk even before it was written. They had Ruach HaKodesh. Because after all, everything in Nach, as we're going to learn in a few days on Daf Tes, everything in Nach is hinted at someplace in Chumash. So therefore, they could derive it that way. But also, there's a verb that, in particular, this, where is this pasuk from? Kapitel Tzadik Tes. Moshe Rabbeinu composed all the kapitlach from Tzadik to Kuf. That's why Tzadik is in the scroll of Moshe, Yishev Akiv. So the kapitlach were already written in Moshe's times, and therefore Shmuel can know it. Anyway, so he says that, so you put me on the same level as Moshe and Aaron. Therefore, ma Moshe v'Aaron le'botu ma'asi yedei m'chayeim. Just like Moshe and Aaron, what they accomplished with their hand did not cease during their life. What is ma'asi yedeim? Rashi says it means Yoshua, that Yoshua was a Talmud of both Moshe and Aaron, and he outlived them. Different other mepharshim over here talk about different possibilities. Rabbeinu Gershom says it refers to the Mishkan. Anyway, whatever it is, so their work outlived what they accomplished, what outlived them. The same way, I want that the one that I accomplished with my own hands, I anointed Shaul with my own hands, shouldn't be nisbatel in my life. So please don't kill him. Marshall says actually another point is that also who's Masiya Dema, Moshe and Aaron, refers to Elazar. Elazar was appointed the new Kohen Gadol while Moshe and Aaron were still alive, and he was anointed right there. So in other words, and he outlived them. So therefore, so Shmuel is saying the same way. I anointed Shaul with my own hand. I want him to still continue. Well, so now Hashem has to do something with Shmuel's tefillah. Omer HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Heichi Eved. So now the Eved is thinking to himself, okay, so what do I do about this situation? Lemus Shaul, should I have Shaul die like I originally planned? Loika Shavik Shmuel. Shmuel doesn't want to allow it because he has a valid argument that like Moshe and Aaron, he shouldn't have Masi Yodav, shouldn't be bottle while he's alive. Lemus Shmuel Adizuter, should Shmuel pass away now, even though he's relatively young? At that time when the story with Amalek happened, again, when he passed away, he was 52. This happened sometime. This happened like a couple of years before Shmuel passed away. So he was like 50 or so. So Miranani Abasre, people are going to be talking about him. People are going to say, he died so young, he must have done some Avera. And Chasar Shalom to say that. Loi lemus Shaul, loi lemus Shmuel. Should we say, fine, neither Shaul nor Shmuel will die. They'll both live a long time yet. The problem is, Kvarigia Malchus David. It's time already for David to be king. The Ein Malchus, Negas Bechavata, after the Kimloinima. One kingship cannot overlap the other one by even a hair's breadth. So therefore, Omer HaKadosh Baruch Hu acts all of Zikna. So the Eved says, okay, you know what I'll do? I'll make Shaul become prematurely old, and that way, when he passes away, not everybody knows when he was born. So like this, people will look at him and think that he's 70 or 80 years old or whatever, and therefore he's passing away at an advanced age, and they're not going to think he passed away because of some Avera. By the way, Marshall points out, when you get down to it, the Pasuk by Vayihi Zok and Shmuel is talking about before any of this happened. Vayihi Zok and Shmuel led to that he appointed his sons as shoftim, and they were misbehaving, and that led the Jewish people to ask for a king, etc., etc. So this is all long before Shaul did anything wrong. So what is the Gemara saying? So either one explanation is, listen, the Eved knows in advance what's going to happen, so he knew that there was going to be this whole thing with Shaul, and therefore he started working on it earlier to make Shmuel start becoming old. And also the point is, if he made Shaul become old, become white haired overnight, all the more so people would be thinking it's because of some Aveda. So it had to happen gradually. So it started earlier when he appointed his sons as shoftim and so on and so forth. And then by the time he passed away, it was far advanced. So in any case, the point is that's why he looked much older than he was. Actually, it's interesting when you think about it. The Ababonel on the Pasuk actually says he disagrees anyway with the Gemara over here. And he says on the Pshat of the Psukim that, yeah, that Shmuel may well have lived to 70 or 80 years old. So, but yeah. Okay, so v'hainu d'chtiv, so this that we're saying, that ultimately the reason why Shaul continued to live and to be king was only in the schutz of Shmuel, this explains a pasuk later on in Sefer Shmuel. It says, v'shaul yoshev v'giva, Shaul was sitting in Giva, which is the name of his capital city, et tachas ha'eshel b'roma, under the big tree in Roma. And eshel was a tree, like v'yita eshel b'eshel, so he's sitting under the eshel in Roma. Now, v'chima in and Giva, it's a Roma. What does Giva have to do with Roma? They're two different places. Giva is Shaul's hometown. Roma is Shmuel's hometown. They're not in the same area. Ela loy malach. It means mi goram l'shol sh'yoshav a Giva shtei shana remechza. What caused that Shaul is able to live in Giva and be king for 2.5 years, which is the total amount of time that he was king, was tefilas yishol Shmuel haramasi, because of the tefillah of Shmuel haramasi on his behalf. So in other words, the Eshel refers to a tzaddik. We find in various places that a tzaddik is referred to as an ilon gadol, a big tree. So in other words, the pasuk is telling us that Shaul was sitting in Giva and being able to be king peacefully because he was under the protection of the Eshel, of the great tree, the great tzaddik who lived in Ramah. So the Gemara asks, okay, but you're saying over here that, so let's go back a few lines. We're saying that Hashem had to have Shmuel, pass away prematurely in order that after that Shaul could be killed and David could become king. Is that how it works? Does one person get pushed aside because of another? That we should say that Hashem makes Shmuel pass away in order to then have the events be able to happen for David to be able to become king? And the answer is ain. As a matter of fact, yes. The Eivishter works exactly. The Omer of Shmuel ben Achmeni, Omer of Yonason, it says Yochanan over here, it's supposed to be Yonason. My diftiv, Alken Chotzavti ben Nevi'im. What does it mean? You know, a Pasuk says, I have, because of that, I've carved out Nevi'im, you know, like I've made them pass away young. Haragti b'imreki, I've killed them with the word of my mouth. It doesn't say because of what they did wrong, which would imply that they did something wrong and therefore they deserve to pass away young. Because of the words of my mouth, in other words, because I said so. So you see that, yes, sometimes Hashem decides a certain things have to happen a certain way, and therefore that causes that the Navi passes away younger than he otherwise would have. So this is an example of that where by rights, if it hadn't been for all of this, Shmuel could have lived to a ripe old age. But instead, the Eivishter had to have him pass away at 52, ultimately, in order to make way for David. Another thing, since we're talking about all these things where Rav Nachman is asking Rav Yitzchak questions, Rav Nachman and Rav Yitzchak have a yasvi the sudasa. The two of them were one time sitting at a suda. Amalei Rav Nachman and Rav Yitzchak leimam mar milsa. So Rav Nachman asked Rav Yitzchak, please say something of Torah. Amalei, so Rav Yitzchak answers him, no. And this is what Rabbi Yechanan said. You're not allowed to talk while you're eating. Because you might have food might go down the windpipe instead of the esophagus. And the person will be in danger. So he didn't say anything further at that time. After they finished eating, Amalei tells him, Yaakov Avinu loy mes. Yaakov Avinu did not pass away. What this means, of course, you have thousands of explanations on it, where there's no way we're going to be able to do them all justice, but we'll do what we can. Amalei, said Rav Nachman tells him, was it for nothing that the mourners mourn, hesped really is a eulogy, that they eulogized Yaakov? And the ones who embalmed him, was it all for nothing? And the ones who buried him, they buried him for nothing? So what do you mean, Yaakov in Olaymes? Amalei, so Rabbi Yitzchak tells him, Mikra ani Dodesh, I'm darshining a pasuk that shows that he really is alive. So what does it mean? Why did they embalmed him and buried him and so forth? It actually says, Svurim hoyu shemes. They thought that he had passed away, but really he didn't. So what does it mean? Mikra ani Dodesh. Shenema, the pasuk says, Va'ata al tira abdi Yaakov nu Hashem, you don't fear my servant Yaakov, says Hashem. Va'al techat Yisrael, don't be broken Yisrael. Ki hinini Mashiach ha-meirochot, because I will save you from far away, wherever in the world you are in Golos. Ve'es zarecha me'eretz shivyam, and your children I'll bring back from the lands where they were taken captive. So makish hu lazarei. So it means the pasuk is making a hekesh between Yaakov and his children. Ma zarei b'chayim, achu b'chayim, just as his children are alive, so is he alive. So what does all this mean? So first of all, the interesting question is asked: why is Rabbi Yitzchak answering with such a long thing? Ein masichin besoda shemi yakdim kana lavesh. That kind of defeats the purpose. If the point is not to speak during the meal because the food might go down the wrong way, I would let him say yakdim hinu lavesh, which is shorter, rather than this whole long arichus. And b'chlal, did Rabbi Nachman not know that concept that food might go down the wrong way? So there's a lot about that. First of all, actually, there is the Prisha mentions an interesting point. This that we're saying, Ein Masich and Masuda, mainly applies only when you're reclining. So one answer, in fact, may have been, Rabbi Yitzchak wasn't necessarily reclining, so therefore Rabbi Nachman figured it might be okay for him to say it by Torah. But Rabbi Yitzchak is saying, nevertheless, we have a general rule, Ein Masich and Masuda. But there is also, among other things, there's the idea that, there's a sicha on this. Part of the sicha was muga and is in chelik lamed hay. Part of it is not. Where the Rebbe develops the idea that, the Reb Nachman took the view, shluchei mitzvah ein nizokin. So therefore, there's no problem saying, doing a mitzvah and saying divrei Torah while we're eating. But Rabbi Yitzchak reminds him, you do have the fact called Shchia Hazeka, or Kviya Hazeka, when you have a known danger, you can't rely on Shluchim and Nizokim because of that. And here is the known danger, Shemayakim, Karnal Avesh. That's why you have to say the whole Arichos. You can't just say Ein Masich and Besuda, because that doesn't explain, well, so what's the problem? So what? Shluchim and Nizokim. So he has to explain the whole thing. Then he says Yaakov in Olemes. So there's the Rebbe explains there's two ways of looking at it. We say that Torah functions within the Gashmiistic world, but what does that mean? Does it mean that the Torah is limited by the Gashmiistic world, or does it mean that the Torah is beyond Gashmius? But the Torah tells us that we have to work within Gashmius. That will affect how we look at when we say Yaakov Avinu Lemes. So what actually happened over there? The fact is you had people were burying him and eulogizing him and so on and so forth. If we take the view that Torah is that Torah and a Yid are limited by the world, okay, then it means he really was dead. But if you understand that Torah is beyond the world, then it means, in other words, there's a level on which they perceive that Yaakov is dead, and therefore they did to him what you need to do to a person who passed away. You do need to eulogize him, you do need to bury him, et cetera, et cetera. But on a higher level of reality, Yaakov Avinu Lemes, and therefore, in other words, we should realize Torah is never limited by the world. The fact that, for example, the Torah tells us that you have to be concerned about Shchiyah Hazekah, not because the Torah is limited by the world, but because the Torah itself tells you to work within the parameters of the world. And therefore, so we can say, in other words, that Yaakov truly was alive, literally Yaakov in a lay mess. But when it has, if practically speaking, the people, including Yaakov's own children, who saw to them he appeared as dead, as Rashi says, and therefore they have to follow what Halacha says to do with a dead body in that case. But not that they should think that really that Gashmius has any power over Yaakov Avinu and over the Jewish people collectively. They say also an interesting vote, why he didn't say Yaakov Avinu Lemes to begin with, is, so what is he saying? Ein Masichin Besuda, because he might say something and the food is going to go down the wrong pipe. So he gives them an example afterwards. He tells him Yaakov Avinu Lemes, which is a very startling statement. Uh-huh. And in fact, Reb Nachman is asking about it. So he's telling him, now you understand why not to be Masichin Besuda. The person might say something so startling that you're gonna jump to respond and food is going to go down the wrong way. So that's just a mazdare b'chayim. So ultimately it means that we're not just saying, in other words, there's a level on which every tzaddik continues to live after they passed away, like the Alphabet. I don't remember actually who said that, but so the point is, in other words, all tzaddikim we have, tzaddikim misasim kruim chayim, as the Alphabet explains in Igeres HaKodesh, because a tzaddik's life is his Av of a Yira, and that continues after he passed away. But with Yaakov, we have the special thing beyond any other tzaddik that Yaakov Avinu Lemes. One reason it explains is because Yaakov is Midas HaEmes, the Rebbe explains in that Sicha, Yaakov is Midas HaEmes, and Emes is something that never changes. Therefore, it has to be that Yaakov himself never truly changed, and he's still alive now, just like he was then. In fact, some other explanations about it are why we mentioned it specifically about Yaakov, because Yaakov's Zaroi is the perfect Zera. Unlike Abraham and Yitzchak, where Yotzim Menu Yishmael and Yotzim Menu Esav, Yaakov is Mitos Yishleima, therefore more than any of the other others, he has that quality, that Zare B'chaim, and therefore that Hu B'chaim. Omer Rabbi Yitzchak, now Rabbi Yitzchak says another thing. Kol ha'omer Rochav, Rochav Miyad Nikri. Anybody who mentions the name Rochav twice, Rochav, the Rochav Azoina from the beginning of Sefer Yeshua, will immediately get Keri, will immediately become a Baal Keri, because she was so beautiful that just the mention of her caused the person to have that effect. Omelet of Nachman, so Rav Nachman says to him, I can say Rochav, Rochav, and nothing happened. Omelet, Rav Yitzchak explained to him, what I'm talking about is someone who knows her and recognizes her, and mentions her name, then he's subject to that. So Rashi explains Yoida and Makira are essentially the same thing. Tosfa says no, Yoida means somebody who actually had relations with her, and Makira just means somebody who saw her. So such a person, that if he says Rochav Rochav afterwards, the memory will be enough to trigger Keri, but not otherwise. There is a very, very long explanation on this from Rabbi Yitzchak, the Rebbe's father, at the beginning of Torah, Rabbi Yitzchak. There's a whole explanation that he has on this whole Gemara and on the next piece of Gemara that extends to about 20 pages. He explains the whole thing deeply up in Kabbalah. Rav Nachman represents Netzach, and Rabbi Yitzchak represents, I think, Gvura. Yeah, Rabbi Yitzchak represents Gvura, Al-Derech Yitzchak Avinu is Gvura, and therefore why Netzach has to ask Gvura all these questions, and why it was at a Suda, and he explains in the middle of it that the Suda was actually none other than a Shalosh Udas. It was a Shabbos Suda. It was Shalosh Udas, he explains. And he explains all these things, what the significance is of why he's explaining, why Dafkah he's explaining Yaakov Avinu Lemes, and why we're mentioning Rochav in this connection, because she represents Bina. She represents Bina of Klippa, which afterwards was transformed into Bina of Kedusha, etc., etc. In that sikha, the Rebbe also talks about that. So we see this is a continuation of that matter of Shkia Hezeka that we have. When there's a known Hezek, you have to be careful of it. So the same way, when you have a person where he sees someone like Rachav, and that has that kind of effect on him, he has to know to be careful in the future. He should know that now there's Shkia Hezeka and Shkia Hezeka, that even mentioning her name can have a bad effect on him. And the Rebbe also goes on to explain in a little more pneumistic way that Yaakov is associated with the idea of not becoming a Baal Keri. We say that by Yaakov, Reuben was conceived from the very first drops of Zerah that ever came out of him. So therefore, we're talking specifically about Yaakov and Lemes. So therefore, we have the counterpart to that is Miyad Nifli, where in other words, the person needs to use the Koyach of Yaakov to avoid that kind of thing. Rav Levick mentions, by the way, over there, the word Yedea and Makir, if you add together the gematria of the two of them, equals Nikri. So that's what the Gemara means over here. Yedea or Makira results in Nikri. Okay, so the Gemara continues. Ki habu niftiri mihadodi, when they were taking leave one of the other, Amalei livorchan mar, so Rav Nachman asked Rav Yitzchak, please give me a bracha. Amalei, so Rav Yitzchak tells him, instead of, in before the bracha, he gives him a preface. Let me give you a mashal what this is like. A person is walking in the desert. He's hungry and tired and thirsty. Then he comes across a tree that has sweet root and good shade, and a stream of water running right by it. So the traveler eats some of the fruit from the tree, he drank some of the water of that stream, and he sat in the shade of the tree. Now when he's getting ready to go, he says, Elon, Elon, tree, oh tree, what should I give you a bracha? Should I bench you that your fruit should be sweet? They're already sweet. It already is. Your shade is already good. That you should always have a fresh source of water available to you. You already have it. You have everything you could possibly need. I give you a bracha that should be Hashem's will, that all the plantings that come from you, the tree, should be like you. So the same way, Rabbi Yitzchok said to Rabbi Nachman, I'll give you the nimshal. What should I give you a bracha? In Torah, should I give you a bracha that you should be a great Talmud Chacham? Hare Torah, you already have lots of Torah. In Ba'osha, Hare Osha, you already have riches. He was the son-in-law of the Reish Galusa. He was very rich from that. In Ba'bonim, Hare Bonim, that you should have children, you already have children. That your descendants should be just like you, that they should have all these advantages of Torah and riches and covering. One of the Mephoshim, by the way, says a verse that we have in all of these things. We have Rav Nachman is asking Rav Yitzchak, and over, almost everything that Rav Yitzchak tells him comes from Rav Yochanan. So one of the Mephoshim explains an interesting point. There's a Gemara in Chulin where Rav Nachman is told something in the name of Rav Yochanan, and he says, even if Rav Yochanan told this to me personally, I wouldn't accept it. I wouldn't accept that this is a valid halacha. So now, later on, when Rabbi Yitzchak has a chance to visit Rabbi Nachman, over and over, he's telling him things from Rabbi Yechanan, specifically, so you should realize to respect what Rabbi Yechanan is saying and realize that that's the way you get Torah from.